The title of this lesson kind of came to my mind when some years ago I heard a discourse by Brother Eugene Burns titled Through My Windows, when he gave a lesson from his own life and experiences and contacts and some of the ebb and flow of life's lessons and connections that he had. And I thought, that was really very nice, and I'd like to look through the eyes and the windows of some others also and see what we might glean from those that have gone before us. You know, through the gospel age, it seems that each generation has touched another generation to pass on the vision and the spirit of truth. In fact, it appears the Lord has used real and personal contacts from person to person to form a connected chain, even from the time of the apostles to the last member of the church. While we would not call this a laying on of hands, it seems to come somewhat close to that idea. And no one has developed the fruits and graces of the Spirit without fellowship with some others who have developed the fruits and graces of the Spirit. It has also been said that we cannot know where we are going until we know where we have come from. So today we want to trace some lives of those who were moved by others and who in turn have walked the path that was trod by others before them, and so inspire us to now travel the road somewhat beyond their windows of time and the flesh. The road has been lofty, courageous, visionary, and at times painful and sorrowful, but always inspiring and worth the journey. Our story begins in the formative years of young Charles Russell in Allegheny, Pennsylvania. He was one of five children of Joseph and Anne Russell of sturdy Irish stock. Only he and one sister survived. By the time he was 9 years old, two brothers and a sister and his mother had died. Yet in those tender years, his mother must have been moved with a strong and powerful influence for the years to follow this young man. Just so the mothers of young Hezekiah and Josiah planted righteous courage in their sons' hearts more than the wicked kings that went before them. Our grasping of the beauties of truth and the mission was to share the message that this young man had. This was not to build a new church, but simply to serve the interests of sincere Christians seeking to know God's plan and to herald Christ's return, earth's new king. Simple Bible study groups sprang up everywhere. Each were autonomous and with no head but Christ. Conventions formed for sharing the grand plan of the ages. Printing and publishing were formed for the hungry and the eager hearts. By the turn of the century, congregations were formed coast to coast and internationally. Even the Jewish community rejoiced to see their part in this plan. But all was not tranquil. Forces within and without sought to undermine and overthrow the good motives. It was painful, and those that suffered did so privately for the most part. When the public media was used against the pastor, he responded kindly, lest any ill repute fall upon the Lord's work. Yet even that returned painfully upon his own shoulders. Moving now to the month before his death, he served the Seattle Convention, where 3,400 people heard him tell the old, old story. His subject was the divine purpose, reasonable and harmonious. A second discourse lasted more than 2 hours and was titled The World on Fire. A newspaper reporter filed an editorial. A small portion of that editorial reads this way. He used no notes or book of any kind. He just stood up and talked for 2 hours and 15 minutes. He is a nice, smooth talker, but frequently fires up. At times, he is eloquent and ends a sentence most beautifully. He is a careful, close reasoner and mind, he can knock hard. While he can say things in the sweetest tones, impressively and eloquently, when occasion demands, his sarcasm is keen and cutting. He is bright, brilliant, and sincere. He is one of the great pulpit orators of this age. The world will be better for his work. Such a man ought to live and work always. We are glad to hear him. We shall do so again, we hope. Long live Pastor Russell. But he didn't, but the message was given that he was not to live long enough to be heard in Seattle ever again. Whether or not Pastor Russell knew his days were short, the end came as a great surprise to the brethren. Traveling through Galveston, Texas on October 24th, he was already exhausted and worn out more mortally, and he tried to conceal this from those that he served. Drawing from his pocket a fountain pen, he wrote the words from the last verse of hymn number 40 that we just sang, and his theme subject, which was to be his last recorded lecture. He continued to travel and serve the brethren for another week, including his last service in Los Angeles. He would die on the train but a few hours after that service. In that respect, his 10th verse of hymn number 40 was indeed a self-fulfilling prophecy. Then let our songs abound and every tear be dried. We're traveling through Emmanuel's ground to fairer prospects nigh. Barely 4 months before the pastor's death, he lost one of his close companions and hallmarks of the present truth. It was Benjamin Barton. Benjamin was born in 1874, consecrated in 1895, and was used regularly in the pilgrim work since 1906, and died in 1916, barely 4 months before the pastor. He is shown here on the left of the group next to Frank Draper. Though a young man, he weathered the doctrinal struggles of the New Covenant issues. He carefully examined every objection and determined the pastor's clarifications were precise, reasonable, and scriptural. Over the years, his many lessons touched the lives of contemporaries, and now they have touched ours also. He also composed a number of poems that have endured with the test of time. They included such well-known poems as Let Your Life Be a Bible and Victory. Victory when you're good is evil spoken of. But he was also known to produce little drawings with a spiritual point to his pen. He drew this little picture in someone's manner. We may live above our trials or beneath them. Where do you live? Brother Barton's early death in Portland, Oregon occurred when he was 41 years old. And it brought many eulogies as this one. Many of his talks to the friends were the nature of spiritual medicine. And you can read the rest of this eulogy. At the end, we read, his heart seemed always overflowing with tenderness and love towards all. And many of his talks to the friends were in the nature of a spiritual medicine, especially adapted to the needs of the class at that particular time and most wisely and lovingly administered. Pastor Russell conducted his funeral service, not knowing that his own death would be but 4 months later. Among other things, the pastor said this, "Our dear brother had a defect of vision. He was nearsighted. When he came into the truth, his vision was enlarged. He saw, by faith, a land that was far off, and he saw something of the king and his beauty. But what our brother has seen by faith, we believe now he sees actually. Our brother was an architect, but when he got rightly in touch with the great architect of the universe, he dropped his pencil and eraser and went forth to give his life in telling others of the wonderful plans and purposes of the great architect. And so he spent his latter years showing forth the praises and telling of the plan of the architect of the universe. What wonderful plan founded upon the sacrificial death of Jesus. Telling how God was building a great spiritual temple through which he would bless all the families of the earth. Well, where Brother Russell was preparing, whether he was preparing Brother Barton for wider responsibilities, we do not know. Yet his early death was a great personal loss for Brother Russell. Brother W.A. Baker told me at one time, before 1960, who knew Brother Russell personally, that it was his opinion that he was preparing Brother Barton to leave the tower after his own death. This was not to be. But in the same year, he began to change appointments of leadership in Europe, notably appointing Brother Conrad Binkley, already sent to Zurich, to oversee the work in Germany, Holland, and Switzerland. And we'll exit here to a little profile of Brother Binkley. These, I've highlighted some sections, and will not be able to read all of these. I'll depend on your speed reading, which can read perhaps quicker than I can verbally repeat all of them. But we will read some portions. He grew up in as part of the Lutheran Church as a resident minister. He came in contact with Carl Lorenz, the grandfather of Brother Edward Lorenz. We'll scroll down a little bit where Brother Carl Lorenz offered him a cabin of a resting place. One evening in this cabin, our brother wanted something to read. Placed on his table stand was a book, The Divine Plan of the Ages. He picked up the book and after the third attempt, read it through during the night. The morning sun was just coming up when he finished. He got out of bed and upon his knees, he prayed to the Lord with the words, "All my life I have served you in ignorance. What will you have me to do?" He immediately left his church and position and with George's sister went to the meetings with brethren in Los Angeles. There he met Brother Russell. He told the pastor of his background and his ability with languages and asked if he might serve him in some manner. Brother Russell suggested that he continue his study of the truth through the volumes, and if ever he needed him, he would write to him. Well, he did. Brother Russell asked him to come later. Brother Binkley arrived at Bethel one evening. Brother Russell asked Brother Binkley to come to his study. In the study, Brother Russell had spread on the carpet, and we'll just slip by that a little too fast, a map of Europe. The pastor seated himself upon the carpet, and Brother Binkley joined him. Then the pastor began to point out on the map where the various classes were in Europe, and stating some of the problems that were in the classes. Then he asked the question, "If you were sent to Europe, Brother Binkley, what would you do about these class problems?" The reply, "I would do nothing, but would let the Lord do it." The pastor's immediate reply, "Brother Binkley, prepare to go to Europe tomorrow." There was no delay. The steamship tickets had already been purchased. This reveals the positive mind of the pastor. We'll slide down a little in the biography. June 1916, only a few months before the death of, in October, Pastor Russell appointed Brother Binkley general overseer of the harvest work in Germany, Holland, and Switzerland. He was given full authority to act on behalf of the Society by letters of power of attorney, giving him complete and sole charge of all the Society's assets, including books, magazines, merchandise, property, accounts, cash in bank on hand, records of accounts, etc. Brother Binkley shared some of his perspective and lessons from the doctrinal and organizational changes after Brother Russell's death in a discourse that he titled Fear. His experience in the midst of these transitions moved him to share a bit of his wisdom. And perhaps you can read something of this. Can that, can the just slid a little bit to the left, just angle it a little bit to the left there, just so we can capture the rest of the screen. Or actually, you can change the focus to fit the parameters the other direction, and maybe a little, not the focus, but the zooms. There should be a zoom that picks up the edges. All right. Well, Brother Binkley saw what was going on in Brooklyn, and he had no desire to continue with the society's work and dictates in Europe, and he returned to America with a great deal more wisdom. And here is just some of the papers and documents that Brother Russell used to send him. June 1912, as you can see here, acting on the society's behalf. June 12, 1916. Shortly before the pastor's death, he was burdened with these troublous situations going on in Europe. Appointment of Conrad Binkley, representative of the Watchtower. Is this day appointed for the Watchtower Bible Tract Society and replacing those that were troublemakers in the seats, and the translation into German and the notary seal and the telegram that arrived from Brooklyn. Pastor dies Tuesday, funeral last Sunday, burial Pittsburgh Monday, love, Watchtower. Here are the meeting places in Barmen, Germany. The brethren with Brother Binkley in the middle of the table, faithfully serving, and his wife, dear sister Hannah Binkley, in Germany. We now want to continue our windows to the Eastern world and how those touched with a message could not keep it to themselves. Brother Olszewski was one who the pastor used to open the truth to Poland, Ukraine, Russia, and the Slavic countries. The following appeared in 1930 Reunion Convention report in Pennsylvania. And again, certain things are highlighted from this convention report in 1930, just after Brother Olszewski died. We've highlighted just a few comments here. He was born in Warsaw, Poland, in 1857. His parents were Orthodox Catholics of the middle class, as with Brother Russell, a mother of gentle care and refining influence were lost to him in childhood, and thereafter his life was one of hardship. We'll not read all the highlighted portions and try to move down to some interesting aspects. In fact, we'll continue down to the third page or on the end of the second. It was during his army service that he contracted typhus and pneumonia. He recovered after a protracted illness, but the weakening effects remained the rest of his life. Unknown to most of the friends, Brother Olszewski had this thorn in the flesh. Only his immediate family and a few intimate friends being aware of his physical condition. He left for Chicago after his arrival, and there it was after some months later that he first came in contact with the Harvest Message being published eagerly by Pastor Brother Russell. While talking with a friend one day, a distinguished gentleman passed carrying a valise of books. He learned that it was Mr. C. Antonowski, and as his friend knew him well, Brother Olszewski was introduced. A friendship sprang up between the young immigrant and himself, and he invited Brother Olszewski to his home, where, among other things, he was shown an English first volume of the Millennial Dawn Studies, as they were then called. There was no literature in Polish bearing on the truth at that time, but Mr. Antonowski, being fully conversant with the English language, patiently explained to the eager young truth seeker as many of the jewels of truth he had himself grasped. From that time, Brother Olszewski spent every possible moment in the company of his benefactor, plying with questions, hungry to learn more of the blessed truth. Thus, the first Polish brethren, Berean Bible class in America consisted of these two brethren who diligently sought, by mutual study, to perfect one another in the knowledge of the Lord. By 1895, he returned to Poland to see if he could impart to his relatives the truth which he had so rejoiced in, but they would have none of him, considering him both a fool and a fanatic. Though much grieved at heart, he was none deterred. Perhaps there's not too much to say that Brother Russell even then realized the earnest zealousness of this young man who spoke only broken English, but whose enthusiasm for the precious truth he had received was so manifest. For years after, practically all the Polish work was entrusted unto Brother Olszewski's hands by Brother Russell, a confidence and trust which he never misplaced. In 1907, Brother Olszewski finished translating the first volume of Scripture Studies, the distribution of which reached even to Poland itself. 1912, Brother Olszewski was sent again and remained some 8 months, during which time he journeyed from town to town addressing the gradually increasing number of private gatherings and also public meetings that could be arranged. A third trip, 1913, from which Brother Olszewski did not return until a year and a half later, the World War breaking out, making it extremely difficult for anyone to leave the belligerent countries. The Olszewski home had become a Polish Bethel, to which many of the friends would bring their troubles and misunderstandings. It was Sister Olszewski's lot to comfort them while entertaining with whatever bounty her limited store could provide. By 1915, there were hundreds of Polish brethren in Chicago alone, with large classes in other cities, particularly Detroit. In this year, Brother Russell called Brother Olszewski to Brooklyn to serve as editor of the Polish Tower. But alas, in a short while, much grief of mind was to be his portion to see this liberty so short-lived. The painful days following the decease of Pastor Russell were great days of trial for the Polish friends as well as the English. In the spring of 1917, the Polish Chicago class, passing through a severe ordeal, requested that Brother Olszewski be permitted to return to them that city from Brooklyn, which was done. To him was relegated the translation of one of the publications brought out at that time termed The Penny of the Parable. Is after Brother Russell's death. After laboriously struggling through that four chapters, he realized that this kind of spiritual food was ice cream, as he termed it, was not for him. And before a united gathering of the class, sorrowfully, though firmly, he expressed his viewpoint on this matter and also his determination to sever all connections with the organization with which he had been affiliated for 23 years. 1922, 1923, returning to Poland. Brother Olszewski continued his labors until the spring. He was now 73 years old, much beset by physical infirmity, which caused great suffering. Nevertheless, he continued traveling from class to class. April 20th, 1930, he led the meeting for the last time in Harvey, Illinois, and died. Here's a picture of his funeral. So, let us continue on. Another window appears in a young protege of Olszewski. His name was August Stahn, but he did not come into the truth until after Brother Russell died. Here we have a short history of his work and the death of August Stahn. Again, we would ask you to perhaps read a little from the screen on your own. In 1911, due to the effects of his older brother, he went to the United States, where in 1918 he began to know the truth. A little later, he was elected an elder in the Syracuse Ecclesia. He worked in a factory as a typist and saved some money, in which was devoted entirely to the work of the Lord. Brother Stahn, besides his obvious capacity for evangelism and persuasion, had the very extraordinary gift of captivating the hearts of people. Due to his personality and force of character, he succeeded in steering the work of the Lord in a true direction. During this period, he held about 5,000 sermons and conferences. During the occupation, because it was known that he was German, he obtained work in an army hotel. The German authorities began to follow him closely, both because of the contact he had with the Poles and because he never used the inevitable salute, Heil Hitler. When he had to go to renew his identity card, he was asked that under religion would be written Christian, which obviously the officials did not want to do. This was the cause of his arrest by the Gestapo. From prison in March 1943, he sent to the brethren the following letter in his own handwriting, March 19, 1943. Among other things, he says, "We are more than 70 people in a single cell." You can well imagine what this means. "Though even here, I recognize the divine overruling because I can still maintain contact with you. I would wish to inform you, dear brethren and sisters, that I have been brought many times before the authorities to answer if I would be willing to go against the enemies with a weapon in my hand. I answered, no, I would not be able because it is forbidden to the teachings of our Redeemer, Jesus Christ. As a result of these declarations, I was photographed from the front and in profile. My hands were tied and I was led to the prison in which I found myself for 1 week. A week passed. But as I have said already, this did not weaken me, but on the contrary, it drew me closer to God and the Lord, and I rejoiced in the privilege of suffering for the eternal truth and divine principles, knowing that if we suffer with him, we shall also live with him. Also, dear brothers and sisters, if a similar thing would ever happen to you, I urge you to persevere in the precious name of our Redeemer, to throw your strength in suffering, even to show your strength in suffering, even if these sufferings would necessarily cost you your present life, that you could obtain eternal life, which will never fade or be violated. Your co-participant in the sufferings of Christ, who loves you very much, 1943, Bialystok." From this moment began the close for Butterstrom of the road of suffering. Through the concentration camps of Auschwitz, Schwarzhausen, Buchenwald, until he came to Nordhausen, where he ended his life. Dear brethren, speaking often about the misery which, so to speak, surrounds us, let us remember that a day would be like in a concentration camp. The wake-up bell aroused the prisoners 4 every morning, 5 during the winter. Since they lacked water, they often washed in a puddle. They did this in great haste amidst yelling and blows. Food, breakfast, 1/2 liter of coffee. Lunch, 3/4 liter of soup. Supper, 300 grams of bread with 15 grams of margarine. According to the witnesses, 4 prisoners, Mother Stahn in the camp of Nordhausen. His decease took place on the last day of March 1945. He died as a result of blows with a stick to his head, administered by a soldier. His body was burned in the ovens of the crematorium, dutifully recorded in the German records of this among thousands of others. Our first visit in 1998 to a dozen or so souls in Siberia who survived the oppressive Stalin years and labor camps, we inquired from where they heard the truth and received their single copy of the volumes, Amana, Photodrama. It was then that we heard the names Olashinsky, Stan, Kopak, Haluchuk, who had risked life and limb to bring them the truth, which the receivers guarded faithfully in the darkest troubles of the 21st century. These are the books they lived and died to preserve for another generation. And so now we want to bring you the story of one sister whose prayers and faith supported her in those years. Her name was Nina Fitz. She now has a new name. Then she was known as Nina Fitz. Articles published in Nastasia in 1995. While she was still living, She says, I always prayed. This is almost impossible to write or too difficult to imagine. The words have been heard by many from the lips of Sister Nina in the history of her life. Her experiences of enormous suffering became an example of strong faith, hope, and undying zeal for serving the Lord. Sister Janina, that is, Nina Fitz, was born to a German family in eastern Poland whose ancestors settled in the vicinity of Swierzyna, near the River Bug, about 300 years ago. Her parents received the truth because of the evangelistic work with the starting poem before the war. Nina remembers many guests in her parents' home. She remembers the visits of Brother Stan of Poland and Brother Tabaszynski from America, who came to visit from Polesia and said they saw apostles, meaning the brethren. Sister Nina consecrated when she was 17 years old. She was not able to go to school, but was reared in a Christian atmosphere of love and unity. She taught herself to read and write. She loved to read the Bible, the works of Brother Russell, the volumes, and various Bible literature. Her difficult trials began at the outset of the war in 1939. Polish territories located beyond the Bug River was taken by Russians. About a year later, Hitler's army took half of the Ecclesia to Germany, about 30 members of the class. Unfortunately, 15 other members of the church fell victim to a cruel murder in 1942 committed by a gang of Ukrainians, killing all those who could not manage to escape. Sister Nina always trusted God's overruling providence, and whatever he would permit, it would be what she needed for her spiritual welfare. The decision was made to move back to Ukraine, but it was here that began the nightmarish experiences in which more than one lost his health, hope, faith, and even life. Nevertheless, Sister Fitz survived, and her faith was not broken, but through much prayer and self-sustaining grace, she was able, by the Lord's grace, help to endure these things. She and her mother and children were trained from the prison to Istikam, in the vicinity of Novosibirsk, Siberia. Sister Fitz sold some of her clothes to a soldier for a little rice, some apples, not realizing how long this food would last. Minus 50 degrees in a small hut, cold, snow, wind, darkness, and hunger were the conditions of which she had to go through for 20 nightmarish years. How do you fight the cold and cruel dungeon around where all the trees were cut down, where the house is full of snow, and the children must sleep in a hole dug in the ground, where it reaches a weak flame lamp? How do you fight hunger? The monthly food rations for 6 kilograms of soybeans, 4 buckets of potatoes, and bread cost 100 rubles in earnings of approximately 150 rubles per month. 5 long years, Nina worked very hard, tending 20 cows 3 times a day, and in between times had to build shelters for the animals that was with frost-bitten hands. In the face of cold, hunger, and hard work, private prayer for Nina was a joy, and the reading of the Bible in secret was a source of spiritual strength. Spiritual and religious life in Siberia did not exist. It was strictly forbidden to and punished for possessing and reading Bible literature, singing songs, and the smallest example of religious gatherings, as well as any correspondence and the use of Polish language, was severely punished with a new prison sentence. Nevertheless, Sister Fitz had a hidden Bible and a hymn book, and often seeking strength and uplift, the Lord heard her prayer. We must pass on quickly. I will show you some links at the end where you may read the rest of these stories if you wish. In spite of the years of dark clouds and hopelessness, slavery, there were faint glimpses of freedom, and we'll pass this little bit and move on. 20 years in Siberia, Nina did not lose her faith in God and neglect her consecration vow, did not lose hope in God, although declaring her faith in God or the truth would mean death. For 10 long years, she had to obey the strict rules. This was following the 20. Not to leave her village without permission. Many times, she had only 2 or 3 hours sleep and worked above human power without food in severe cold, yet she survived, not losing her hope. During the Gorbachev reforms, Sister Fitz lived in Kyrgyzstan in poverty, an atmosphere of fear of informants. Penalties for illegal assembly were often higher than the monthly salary for work. With reforms that Gorbachev introduced to the USSR started another wave of problems and experience. Sister Fitz did not hesitate to tell of the incidents that happened in Kyrgyzstan as anarchy, in which one can best describe the communistic government as beastly. In those 20 years in Siberia, more than once she experienced pain, suffering, and witnessed injustice, misdeeds by the soldiers and heads of the Russian government. 46 years being a widow, Sister Fitz did not forget her covenant she made with God. Her desire was always to serve God. Her hope was to gain eternal life, even if it was at the feet of the highest, just to be under his protection. From Ukraine, then Germany, from faraway Siberia and Kyrgyzstan, and finally to Stuttgart, Germany, and now in Frankenthal Ecclesia with the Brethren, just like it was before the war, she found the Brethren again. She walked out of Siberia. We visited with her before her death in Germany, and this is a bit of our summary of our questioning about the details of the time. This little event told at our heartstrings. Siberian labor camps under Stalin. Winter, it was 50 below zero. No one had the right to go anywhere without papers. She lived on 5 kilograms of potatoes, soybeans 100 grams of bread for the children. The 2 children were young. One was 1 year and one was 6 years old. They lived in a small house, nothing in it, no lights. In winter, it was caked with ice inside and out. She milked 20 cows 3 times a day. Her hands became swollen. They got so bad, she couldn't deliver the required quota. So they decreased her food ration. While milking, she had to leave the children without supervision. They had very little to eat. She made soup from grass. She said, "I have nothing to cry about now, only joy." However, one evening she returned home to find one of her children had died in the cold that she could not retreat in the minus 50 degrees. We asked her if there was anything from those years, and she produced a small tattered Bible and said, "Only this, nothing more is important." When asked what sustained her in those times, without hesitation, she answered, "It was prayer." Sister Nina clings to almost no material things in this life. Sister Nina died at 90 years old of age in 2008 in Frankenthal, Germany, and Brother Daniel Coletta had her service. And here we are with visiting the sister with the Bible in her hand that was her lifeline. Brethren, there are so many stories, and our time is coming to a close. I will not read this story, but just show you another story from Ukraine. Maria Karavits, the Brethren in Ukraine in the earlier years, her personal testimony. Maybe there's just one short area that I will try to read. I had a package for our brother and sister who were being put on the export trains for execution. A guard, having intently checked everything, let me come close to the car. The bundle wasn't small, so he had to open the door for a moment. I gripped Brother Vishnevsky's hand. Sister Gladezik made a dart for the door, too. But she was too late. The door was shut. However, I began to talk through the window. I failed to see that I had crossed the forbidden area. A guard came up and ran up at a run and began to huddle me to the open car door, saying, "If you want it so much, you will be there right now." Sister Kitts cried out and tried to drag me down. Another woman came running up to help her, and thus they saved me from Siberia. You will find other harrowing stories of these brethren who did what they must do because of their faith. Beginning in 1939, we met illegally. Every meeting was on some pretext or other, either a birthday, an anniversary, or something else. Marriages were few because the young were few. And some of the brethren that retained some of their early memories before and during the war, the Dohan family, the Pozersky family, in those early years. You know this book, Romania is Another Story. It is partly told through Sky Through the Bars, but only partly. And I must change the view on this. There's something wrong with my technicality, and I must change this to two-page view. Because I don't want to take much time with this. We just show two pages of, perhaps you have the book or have seen it. And we'll just briefly cover the years of suffering for faith, the brethren in Romania, bringing their world out of chaos, 1930 to 1948. The communist period, trials and blessings, memories of a generation behind prison doors, the best of the best, the old brood hen, because I whistled in church. He was defending with power of our beautiful teachings. The present sufferings are not forever. The sky seen through the bars. Of those evidenced here, there are only two brethren who are still living. This one and one sister, Mother Galish. Much joy is ours. And Maria and Vasily Insia. Maria is still living. Her husband, Vasily, who took his, during the revolution in Romania, took his megaphone to the top of the police station and calmed the riotous crowds because a better day is coming, and told them about the kingdom. If you have not read this book, you should. Well, brethren, our time is drawing to a close. Finally, I want a brief look at brethren in East Africa. Their experience with endurance and persecution and rejoicing continues even till today. Brethren have visited West Africa, and I've not been to Nigeria and Ghana, as brethren have. But these are some of the pictures that we've taken in East Africa, with the chart of the ages and discovering this beautiful detail. In reprint 3897, from a letter written to the pastor describing one of brother's experiences at a convention that he attended, said this: "We thought of the progress these dear friends had made as we looked into their beaming faces and saw the beautiful lines traced there by the divine artist, lines and clothing that told of the beauty of thoughts, desires and hopes stored away in each bosom, and we seemed to hear the heart throbs utter, 'None of self and all of me.' And then we noticed lines and features that indicated discipline, hardness of as good soldiers, firmness, decision, patience, and we were impressed and at once tightened our armor a little more and grasped the weapons of our warfare a little more firmly and faced about a little squarer and stood a little straighter, and our hearts responded, 'Yea, Lord, we are ready to follow even unto death.'" Time fails us to share the stories of other lives and other windows. Some are still living to tell the road they traveled and through their windows. Others have told their stories and their journey is now finished. Look at their faces. You will see the marks of Jesus. The point of our lesson is that our Lord has more need of your deficiency than of your strength. He can use our submission more than our status, our trust and reliance more than our works. 1 Corinthians 12:9-10. He said unto me, My grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in necessities, in persecutions, in distresses, for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. Notice the one on the lower left. This soldier of the cross just finished his journey last year. He spent 20 years in prison so that another could continue the work of printing the truth in freedom. Two soldiers, Misha and Vanya, the prisoner one and the free one, together. One was 20 years in prison, not revealing the other one, so the message could continue to be printed. They both just died last year, and died days from one another, as soon as the free one labor was over. The one who had been a prisoner for the work was now free himself to leave his post and to die. These were my parting pictures with this willing prisoner, an old soldier of the cross. So, dear brethren, if you want to learn from their lives, go to them, but don't wait too long. Their voices are fading behind their doors and beyond their windows. You can read of these lives and chronicles, and a few more